Hey there, everybody. It is August 15th, 2013, and you are listening to this show, So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line. Send that email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. If you have any guest suggestions, if you have any feedback, if you just want to say a So Gay hello, send that email on over, and we will, of course, respond to you. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And right there on the homepage of thisshowisogay.com, you can submit questions to our relationship expert, Dr. Frankie, and she will answer them on the air in a few weeks. Or you can participate in our $10,000 challenge. We're trying to raise $10,000 for the San Francisco to LA AIDS ride. We're trying to get 1,000 people to donate $10 each. The link is right there on our homepage. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is, of course, This Show Is So Gay. And finally, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have a jam-packed, uber-fun show for you this week, so we must get started. We have talked about so many different aspects around marriage equality in the past 5 years that sometimes we forget that there are some very real nuts and bolts issues that cannot be ignored. And thus, we welcome to the show Ronnie Tenenbaum. Ronnie has been revolutionizing the bridal jewelry industry with his 25 years of experience in designing and creating engagement, wedding, and anniversary rings for same-sex couples. He has been acting as a consultant to both retailers and same-sex couples on the new etiquette of the ring in LGBT engagement and marriage, a term that he coined and pioneered to describe the culture and ethos of gay marriage. He recently created a training program for retailers catering to the gay and lesbian market, educating them all on how to create a welcoming environment to same-sex couples in their stores. Hey, Ronnie, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, Ken. Thank you so much for having me.
So much to discuss, sir. Are you ready?
I am ready and rolling.
What is a nice Israeli boy like you doing designing jewelry? How did that come about?
You know, actually, that is exactly where it came about. I was just out of the army in Israel way back when, and I had worked with a group of people during the army time that I actually enlisted for their reserve duty, and they were in the diamond exchange. And so I got very familiar with them, and that kind of set the tone for the rest of my career. I got very interested in diamonds and jewelry back then.
Look at that. And at one point did you say, all right, I'm going to make a career out of this?
Well, you know what? Careers come many years later after you realize that you've accumulated so much information and data and experience and knowledge over the years. I've been in the jewelry industry since then, over 25 years, and it's really been the last five or six of them that I've actually been on my own, building my own jewelry line and promoting it and selling it to who I want and the way I want to.
I was reading on your website that 2008 was kind of a pivotal year for you, kind of that time that you realized I can set off on my own and I have this vision that I want to put into action.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. At that point in time, I had done so much in jewelry already, from manufacturing to sourcing of diamonds to designing to marketing to all sorts of things behind the scenes for other companies. And I realized at that point in time, I had so much wealth of knowledge that I really wanted to step out and do something that was close and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how this whole thing came about. There was no one catering to a same-sex community. There was no one making jewelry that kind of targeted and pinpointed same-sex couples. And I really felt that there was definitely a void there that I wanted to fill.
And tell me what that even looks like. So what does it mean? You know, I feel like we have listeners thinking, well, I don't understand what gay jewelry looks like. And that's not really what it is that you're doing.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I keep trying to tell people, is that there's no such thing as gay jewelry. There's
right.
No such thing as a gay marriage. There's no such thing as gay anything. We're defining it that way. A piece of jewelry that I design really has to be something a little bit different and unique than what is out there in the stores. My friends and family have been coming to me for so many years and saying, oh gosh, Ronnie, we're so sick and tired of what we see in the stores. How can we get something that's fresh and exciting and innovative? And with that in mind, I kind of felt, well, people do want some sort of symbolism in their rings, but they don't necessarily want rainbows and triangles to walk around as their wedding rings.
Right.
So I put together things that are very sentimental and intimate, such as an LVOE, which is one of my collections. LVOE, love is love, no matter how you spell it.
Yeah.
It's very potent. It's very dead on the target. It means love is love no matter who the two people are. So those are the kind of sentiments that I like to put in collections. Tie the knot, another thing. Tie the knot is a wonderful way to show a couple that they can actually buy jewelry that actually defines their relationship. They're tying the knot. So these are things that weren't out there before.
Right. Now let's go nuts and bolts. Should couples be going together to get their rings, or should we be surprising our partner?
Well, I definitely lecture about that quite a lot, and I've always said there are two schools of thought. I always find that there are definitely out there the romantics, and I call the romantics the ones that come to me independently of their partner, and they say, you know, I really want to surprise him or her, and I want to, you know, talk it through, see what we need to get, what do I do, and how do I go about doing it. There are definitely also the other type of purchasers where they come to me actually as a couple. They definitely have discussed it, talked it through, and they want to see what each other is interested in. We're totally talking about a new dynamics these days. It's not where we knew our roles in the past, not our roles, but straight couples knew their roles in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Man and woman met, man went out, he bought the engagement ring, he proposed, she wore the diamond, and when they got married, they each gold band.
Mm-hmm.
Today, the dynamics has changed. Now you have two people of the same sex in the relationship. So who proposes to who does what? So all of those things are questions that are very legitimately on the table. People don't really realize that until they come to that point in time when they need to actually figure it out. And that's kind of when they come to me. So it's either the romantic that comes alone. I say you do what your heart tells you to do. If it's a couple that really talks everything through, it's perfectly okay to shop together.
Now, what about, you know, the third category of people like me where I think my neighbor would really like a ring, but we haven't really talked yet?
Well, you send your neighbor to me and I'll convince him to get you a ring.
Wow. This is a full service process. I love it.
I'm telling you.
By the way, you mentioned the LVOE project.
Yes.
Tell everyone the support in that program. How does that benefit our community? Because there's a very amazing organization that we, of course, adore that you support.
The LVOE program is a very large one. It actually it encompasses several different collections, and one of them, that which I thought was very close to my heart, I really wanted to do something that was a little bit more cause-driven,
mm-hmm.
and I created a collection called the LVOE Life Project.
Yeah.
And the LVOE Life Project is actually my move a little bit away from wedding jewelry, in that it really it defined something that was very close to my heart, and that was anti-bullying, specifically in teenagers and in gay and lesbian teenagers. And what I do with the LVOE Life Project, just like the message LVOE, love is love no matter how you spell it, in the LVOE Life Project, my message is really, no matter how you live it, love your life.
Nice.
So the message is really about teaching teenagers that, you know, it's okay to love who you are, and things do get better. And in that sense, yeah, a lot of the donations from that go to donate to organizations that treat anti-bullying.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Well, I'm not sure if you heard, but the Supreme Court made some pretty darn cool decisions around marriage equality for the LGBT community a few months back. How did that affect what it is that you do?
Well, I have to tell you, I mean, obviously I am getting phone calls from all over the country, and again, you mentioned it in the beginning, that I do deal also with retailers as
mm-hmm.
well as consumers, as well as couples that come to me. So the retailers are the ones that are very excited and interested, and that's where I have to do a lot of educating. Retailers come to me, and the great thing about it is that I'm not necessarily selling to retailers that are in specific gay and lesbian communities,
right.
Such as a San Francisco or a Provincetown or a Key West or whatnot. I'm actually looking at bread and butter, everyday mom and pop stores that are in communities that are in mainstream, and they know that there is a community out there that wants to buy jewelry. They're either hesitant, they don't know if a store is supportive of them, they don't feel comfortable going into a store. This is a way to actually reach out to retailers and tell them, hey, you can really reach out to the community and have a wonderful relationship with couples that come into your store. This is a whole new market for you, and it opens the door for the community to actually feel comfortable and at ease. If a store carries my line, they know that they are supportive, because I wouldn't sell to stores that are not.
And I have to ask, and I hate going right at the drama, but are there indeed stores that you've had to say, I'm sorry, you're not carrying my stuff?
Well, there's definitely, it runs the gamut. You know, when you're selling all over the country, designs and jewelry is one thing, but when you're selling a very specific niche market, you get definitely people that maybe are not as inclined to participate in educating their staff or in educating or in advertising or doing whatnot that they feel is a little bit more needed for this type of jewelry. And I'll say, well, you know, that's really just not for us. We really want someone who is going to actively approach the community, who's actively going to want to go to the gay and lesbian community centers and is going to want to advertise, and they're very proud to carry product in their store. That's the same kind of store that I would also want anyone from the community to actually go in and feel comfortable and relaxed to purchase.
Right. What are some of the questions that some of those retailers ask? Because, again, I love the part where you're not just focused on the 12, 13 states, because I'm just blanking right now if it's 12 or 13. I think we're at 13, aren't we?
Yeah. I think it's 13, yeah.
Not just on those states, but retailers all across the country. What are some of the questions that they ask that make you pause and think, oh, gosh, I have some educating to do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's definitely a wealth of knowledge that they're interested in. They don't really, they might know that they have a gay and lesbian community around them, but they don't really know if a couple has ever come into their store and have they catered to a couple like that. So they want to know details such as questions. I equip them with questions and answers such as a couple comes into a store and they want to know, well, do we have to get matching rings? That's a very typical question that I get from couples all the time. That's something that I really need to share with a store, with a retailer. He would know what to answer a couple like that. My personal take on that is no, couples do not need to buy matching rings. Again, we're talking about a brand new dynamics today, so when you are talking about two men or two women, there does come a question where, oh, do we actually have to each buy an engagement ring or each buy a wedding band, and do they have to match? So no, I don't feel, my personal opinion is that I don't feel a couple actually need to mix and match. But there are definitely ways to go around in getting their jewelry to actually kind of symbolize the same things for each one. I always feel a couple is, they're two individuals within their couplehood. But anyway, so that's the type of questions that a retailer will ask me. They definitely go down the road of asking, well, what do you consider your jewelry as gay jewelry? And, you know, I have to define to them, no, it's not really, there's no such thing as a gay jewelry, and we talked about that.
Right.
So those are the type of questions that I do get from retailers.
So now what do you say to the consumer who feels that pressure, okay, I got to get a ring, but maybe right now not the most affordable thing for me right now? Are there creative things that folks are doing instead of rings?
Well, I don't necessarily see a lot of things that are instead of. I've definitely heard of, and I've definitely over the years have made, I think the one symbolic thing that I've ever made was really a pendant. I really focus on rings only because I'm in that sense a romantic.
Love it.
Maybe old-fashioned, but I love the idea that the ring is really the symbol. It sits on a finger that you know, goes straight to the heart, and it's just a very, very sentimental thing. It's been generations and generations and centuries of tradition involved in it, and I think that we should just be a part of that tradition.
Yeah,
that people exchange rings as a symbol of their love.
Love it, and we like that whole circle thing.
Absolutely.
How often do your friends ask you for free samples?
Oh no!
I'm not saying you give them.
No, they do ask. Of course they ask. And, you know, sometimes I can't say no. But that's not always with the diamonds and all the
Right.
Always fun things to go around, you know, that, sometimes free samples fall along the way.
Yeah, and what type of discount do you generally give to radio show hosts?
Oh, I see. I know exactly where we're going.
Listen, this is a general important question that our listening audience is going to have.
I see. Well, the discount, would you honestly really want to wear?
Oh, man.
That is an engagement ring that was bought at discount.
I feel like you channeled my mother for that one. I'm like, that was the perfect, that was good. That was a good answer.
My mother taught me well. Jewish mom taught me well. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the design that you just came to you. Tell me that design that just knocked your socks off, that you put out there, that you're like, all right, this is one of the best things I've done.
Well, besides my LVOE, which I really love because of the message, I really do love my tie the knots. I do find that that nautical knot has been very, very successful and very good for me, and I really loved the way that people really attach themselves to the message behind it. They love that whole concept of the knot. So that has been very, very nice and very good. I do love solitaire rings because I do find that whole message of engagement, which really the gay and lesbian community has not yet taken up as a tradition yet. We've been so enthralled with getting laws passed for marriage, we kind of overstep that part of the journey, which is the engagement. So I really kind of focus a little bit also on the engagement and rings that are engagement rings. There are not many men's engagement rings out there. They're single stones. So I particularly love when a nice ring has a diamond center, and that kind of really is a focus for me. So from those collections, I really love the bricks collection, which bricks are really the building blocks of every relationship. So I love that sentiment, and that's one that I kind of favor. And I constantly work on growing the collections. So if bricks was out there with five or six designs last year, I'll always add to it and make it a little bit spicier and interesting, and next year another piece to it.
It's so interesting that your work is also at that fun intersection of even talking about masculinity and femininity, which we talk about all the time on this show, that is something that folks who come into you and are looking for support have to wrestle with. All right, so what I'm putting on my finger, does that conform to what a man should be wearing, what a woman should be wearing?
Well, that is an excellent point to make, and I have to tell you that this is fascinating to me, actually, as a jeweler. For all the years that I've worked for other companies, and we always sold jewelry out to stores and retailers and whatnot and chains, there was always a specific design element for a lady's ring, and there was always it's a little more feminine, it's a little smaller, it's a little more delicate, petite, whatever you want to call it, and men's are usually big and bulky, and I have found that most of my designs actually sell in reverse. So most of my designs, if I do make them, a little chunkier, a little bigger, less diamonds, bold, the women love them. Mm. And I would call them actually, you know, as I design, I used to use the terminology that I grew up with. So this is my ladies' version and this is my male version. And I would always find that I'm selling them kind of in reverse. The men love a little more glitzy and you know, bling and diamonds and a little more delicate. And the women actually sometimes go for the bigger and bulkier. So I've discovered there's really there are no boundaries. I find that most of the designs now I really call unisex, because whether I make it for male or female, they both like it and they both buy it into, you know, the design. So it's perfect.
Love it. Love it. Well, we have to get to your song selections real quick. And I know we get some angry emails because we haven't done this segment in quite some time, and I feel really bad. So we're going to return to it. This is the part of the show where you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about you. It's a little self-analysis for our listening audience. And I must say, as someone in the industry that you, sir, are in, some very interesting song selections. I'm a little bit excited, so I'm going to pick some that entertain me a little bit more, given what it is that you do. Tell everyone what Daft Punk's Get Lucky says about Ronnie.
Oh, you caught me on that one.
Exactly.
Well, I love just, you know, to me, life is fun
yeah.
and exciting, and it's all about – going out and having a great time, and you don't know where you're going to turn a corner, and you might find the person of
look at that. Dreams. Look at that. And I would imagine that if people are coming to you and they're feeling this immense pressure, and like it's that's not what the experience is supposed to be like, right?
Right.
There you go.
Absolutely.
All right. I'll make you do one more, and I'll make it easier for you because I'm being nice. Tell everyone what Maroon 5's Love Somebody says about Ronnie.
Well, first of all, I adore Maroon 5. I love everything that they put out, and I absolutely am a big video fan, and I just love the whole new technology in the video. I keep watching it over and over again, and you can't get away from the fact that the song is about love somebody.
Yeah.
So to me, everything is about love and how does love come into play. I mean, you can always have fun, you can always play, but at the end of the day, everyone's looking for loving somebody.
Nice. I actually haven't seen the video yet.
Oh, you should.
I listen to the song all the time. I haven't seen the video. Am I going to get a nice dose of Adam Levine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. That's all that matters. That's all that matters. Well, tell everyone where they can find more about all the great things that you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, my website, ronnietenenbaum.com, RonnieTenenbaum, has a listing of stores that the collections are in throughout the country. There's constantly new stores, and I'm talking to people all over the country, so always go back and check for new ones. And that's basically where you can find me. I am on Facebook as well at Ronnie Tenenbaum, and that's it, yeah.
Perfect. Well, look, I love, as I said at the top of the show, there's so many different aspects about marriage equality that we talk about in this very grand sense. And what I love about what you're doing are these are some of the very real conversations that come, that are derivative of marriage equality, of folks going out there and going to retailers who may or may not be knowledgeable. And I love that you are putting your voice out there, not just to design jewelry that will help cement this incredible relationship, but also helping retailers so that the experience of purchasing your jewelry, of embarking on this journey, so that experience is as supportive as possible. So I love that we were able to get you on to talk about that.
Awesome. Well, thank you for having me. I definitely appreciate it, and I had a great time. And anytime.
That rocks. I look forward to the free samples. Ronnie, thank you so much.
Okay, they're in the mail, Ken.
I know you're inside, you're feeling so hollow.
And we are back. Well, the fun continues with our next guest, hailed as one of the nation's funniest comics by Curve Magazine. Vicki Wagner has torn up stages across the U.S. and Canada. She's emceed several Pride events across the nation. She's headlined, you know, just everywhere. She's been on ABC, NBC, TLC, Bravo, all these different three-letter networks. She's been featured on the front page of the West Hollywood Independent, the Santa Barbara News Press, the West Sider, Curve Magazine, a ton of other publications. She's hosted over 50 episodes of The Vicki Wagner Show, a local cable TV variety show in which she interviewed actors, actresses, musicians, comedians, and more, and she integrated her own improv and sketch into there. She's currently the host of the new talk show, Brash Babble with Vicki Wagner in West Hollywood. How she has time for me is completely inconceivable, but here she is. Vicki, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Hey, Ken, that was a great intro. Thank you.
Let me make it a little bit better. Let me be the first to say happy birthday, Vicki.
Oh, thank you, Ken. I love it. I'm a Leo, so hey.
You're a Leo. So for our listeners who don't know, Vicki has turned 32 yet again today.
That's right.
What's in store for this birthday?
Actually, I'm going to go to the San Diego Wild Animal Park.
Wow.
It's like a but kind of like a safari almost. It's down in San Diego County, and it has, you can go and take like a little tram around, and you can be out with the giraffes and all the rhinos and ostriches. I've done it one time before, and I got chased down by an ostrich.
Is that a metaphor? That's not even a metaphor, is it?
I hope it isn't.
Well, we have so much to talk about on this, your birthday. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Well, we start with you as we start with all of our comics. Vicki, tell our listening audience, where does Vicki Wagner find the funny?
Oh, my God. I'm an observational comic, Ken. So, basically, I'm one of those people that just kind of watches people. I'm like, really? Are you serious? And then I will take something that I have seen, and I'll just turn it into a joke, because most people have observed the same thing, and their brain, they're probably thinking, what the hell? And then I'll just bring it to life and do like an act out on it, and then everybody finds the same, you know, humor in it, and so it usually works and goes over well.
Give me some of your comic heroes.
Oh, Richard Pryor, Wanda Sykes, Lewis Black, Amy Schumer is very funny. You know, current comic right now, Amy Schumer is hilarious. Probably, though, Chris Rock is funny.
Yeah.
Eddie Murphy. I mean, I like some of the old comics because that's when I was, you know, younger, and that was my influence, you know?
Totally. I'm telling you, I used to watch that VH1 stand-up spotlight, and I would go downstairs and do the routines word for word, and my parents said it wasn't funny.
Oh, that's hilarious that you did that. I'm surprised you're not a comic.
As our listeners know, I did have my couple weeks of stand-up comedy. You shouldn't drink that much on stage. That's just a tip from me to you, Vicki.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad to know that, Kat. I'm glad to know that. That's why you had to go and get your PhD, right?
Exactly. Because that is the stand-up comic backup plan, and everyone knows it.
Exactly. Let's go to school for 8 years and not...
I do remember that day that my mom just said, you know, you're not Judy Gold. I know, Mom. Thanks. All right. Well, some of the people that you observe in your observational comedy, we got to start with your parents. I read online your parents, apparently bikers.
Yes, they were. Not anymore, but they were when I was growing up. So it's probably honestly where I got my crazy, you know, whacked out point of view of life, because I didn't have the normal childhood that everybody else had. You know, I was this wild, crazy, it's a party every week childhood. So even when I got older, I'm expecting like, hey, this is boring to me. And, you know, some of my girlfriends would be like, life is boring, Vicki. You just didn't have the normal life.
How did you end up with biker parents and then got sent to Catholic school?
Exactly right. Exactly. Well, actually, I'm from Chicago.
Yeah.
And my family is Irish. And if you know anything about Chicago, you know, if you're, you know, Irish Catholic is big in Chicago. So my parents actually both went to a Catholic school, but my dad got his first motorcycle when he was like 13. And my dad was always kind of a badass. Can I say that?
Oh, you can totally say that.
Okay. So my dad was always a badass, and he actually got in with this group of guys, and, you know, there was a motorcycle club forming. There was a guy actually from the Hells Angels who started a motorcycle club in Chicago, and it was called the Devil's Disciple. I mean, not that they worshipped, you know, the devil. They just kind of wanted to sound scary.
Right.
You know? Kind of like the gay Republicans.
I hear ya.
You know what I'm saying? So actually he got into it at a young age, and, you know, they just rose up and formed this pretty big motorcycle club. And, you know, by the time I came around, you know, I guess my dad was 20. You know, he'd already been in the club for like 5 or 6 years at that point. So.
Wow.
So basically they still sent me to the Catholic school because we were Irish Catholic. So, yeah, I know it's a dichotomy, right?
Love it. I love it. And then somewhere in the mix, you're thinking, yeah, I should go into the Air Force.
Well, actually, what I was, you know, how that came about is because, you know, we were growing up. I mean, my parents got divorced when I was 12. So there really wasn't a lot of money to send me to college. So I'm like, well, what am I going to do with my life? And I got the great idea, oh, I want to travel, you know, like, okay. Why didn't I call a travel agent, right?
Right.
So I joined the military, and I joined it right in my senior year of high school. So
wow.
Right after I got out of high school, yeah, I went to the Air Force, and I wanted to see the world, and I got sent to Mississippi.
Wait, is that really where they sent you?
Yes, it is. I'm not kidding you.
That is hilarious.
I know, exactly. I wanted to go to the rest of the world, you know, and I requested all overseas, and then, yes, I got sent to Texas, and then Mississippi, and then ultimately Washington State. But No, they did not make my dreams come true.
Wait, did you not leave the country in the Air Force?
I did not. I know, I requested it, and they give you, it's called, that's why they call it a dream sheet, because, you know, you dream. And the weirdest part is there was a guy who I went to school with who requested all stateside, and they sent him to the Philippines. So I'm like, how was it that I requested to go out? He requested to stay in, and it's like, okay, it's, you know, definitely a wish.
We have to take comfort in thinking, and I'm just deciding this for both of us, that there was someone who got that letter and with their assignment, and they got Mississippi, and that one guy was like, did a fist pump and said yes.
I know, I'm sure that there was. I'm sure there was.
Okay.
You know, definitely. But not me. But that's where I went to school, actually. And I don't know if you've ever been to Mississippi, but they do have an ocean, and it's brown.
Oh, gosh.
It's the brown ocean.
Nice.
Not blue.
And how did your military career end?
Well, I actually got kicked out of the Air Force for being gay.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that, but, you know, I had a top secret clearance when I was in the Air Force. And I you know, because I had a job. I was a command post controller on a strategic air command base. And that's a base that has nuclear weapons. And so I had a top secret clearance, and somebody, you know, saw me kissing a girl, which I was, and they turned me in. So there you go. And I ended up getting kicked out for it. And really short, sad side note was back then, you know, they wanted, if you had a top secret clearance, they wanted to put you in prison for it.
Wow.
So I got investigated for 9 months, and, you know, my lawyer did his best, and he got me kept me out of prison, but they were, you know, I was facing 5 years in prison for, you know, being a threat to national security.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's how my country rewarded me.
Yeah. But, and in all seriousness, you know, look, you're not the only one. And unfortunately, this happens to so many different folks. And they let it really derail their lives, as naturally it would, you know, to their credit. They did as best they could. And you took all of these different experiences and said, I'm going to put myself on stage. I'm going to represent myself in a way that actually provides other people with entertainment.
You know what? You're 100% right about that because, you know, right after I got out of the Air Force, I was just, you know, they put it on your discharge paperwork. They do. And, you know, you have to have your discharge paperwork if you're in the military to show anybody.
Right.
So it wasn't like I could hide the fact that I was gay because on my discharge paperwork, they literally wrote discharge for a homosexual act.
Unbelievable.
You know, I'll make a quick joke. I mean, it's not like I joined the gay circus or anything, but, you know, it's like, I'm serious. I mean, it's like, okay, a homosexual act, what is that? And because I kissed a girl, that's what it was. So I joined the board of directors for the Gay Veterans of America, and I became really, you know, very vocal about, yeah, I'm gay, and this is what a gay person looks like, and, you know, why are you guys persecuting us? We're no really different than you, and I went on from there, and I met some people, and I got in a few books about being gay and kicked out of the military. And I, about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, I decided to get into stand-up comedy, and I took a comedy class, and the instructor at that time said, well, what's the most unique thing that's ever happened to you? And, you know, people were like, oh, I got stood up at the aisle, or I did this. I'm like, oh my God, I got everybody beat. And so I told them, I'm like, oh, I got kicked out of the Air Force for being gay. And she's like, and that's what you're going to do your routine on. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I am not doing my routine. And she was actually really smart. And she said, you know, you're the only person in the stand-up community that would have an act like this.
Absolutely.
And she convinced me over the 8 weeks to create an act. And I did create an act based on getting kicked out of the military for being gay. And I did make it funny. And some people would come up to me and say, you didn't really get kicked out for being gay, did you? And I said, yes, I did. So I felt like I was a face of, you know, what kind of people do they kick out for being gay? I mean, I don't think back then, at that time, 10 years ago, people were thinking about, you know, it ruining people's lives and, you know, whatever somebody would have thought about a gay person at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think even as early as 10 years ago, people were still having this crazy idea of gay people were all one type of stereotype, like all women had short hair and wore flannel and combat boots and all men, you know, carried their pink martinis and a little dog that had a matching outfit with them. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think that's what everybody's stereotype was, and they weren't just seeing, like, I mean, you know, gay people that come in just like straight people, and we look like there's thousands of different types of us, you know? So I kind of did feel like I was doing a service and saying, yeah, I got kicked out, and I was bringing awareness to people about it.
What do you remember about that first time on stage?
The very first time I did, because I took a comedy class, the very first time I was on stage was at the Improv here in Hollywood, California, and it was called the Showcase. So basically you had everybody in the class goes up before you. And apparently the teacher thought my material was risque, so she put me second to last, and only second to last. Yeah, exactly. So second to last to a real porn star here, a real male porn star who actually has his handprints up on Sunset Boulevard.
Of course.
And exactly. And but so I think that the audience was kind of tired when I came on, but I just went on because we weren't allowed to sit in the room, so I had no idea of, you know, what the audience had been like prior to me. And I just came and did my thing, and it was great for me because I got so much applause and so much laughter, and so many people came up to me afterwards to talk to me that I was completely hooked. And at the Hollywood Improv, how it is on the stage, the lights are so blinding that you really can't see past, like, the very first few people right there.
Mm-hmm.
In the first row, and I just, you know, kind of focused on them, and when you look out, you're just looking out to blackness, and I was so nervous, though. I remember I was kind of holding on to the microphone, and, you know, nowadays, you know, I will move the mic stand behind me, but back then, I'm just, like, kind of holding it onto it for support.
Yeah.
And after that, I just, you know, got booked, and
wow.
It was a great experience for me. And honestly, within 3 weeks of me being on the stage, because of my routine, the comedy teacher was right. The West Hollywood Independent contacted me and said, we'd love to do a story about you. And they put me on front page of the Los Angeles Independent and the West Hollywood Independent, and it has a circulation of 1 million.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's honestly, it just took off from there, and I started getting more stage time, and more people contacted me, and I got more stage time, and you know, more papers contacted me. Within 6 months of me first doing stand-up for the first time, I was headlining. My first headlining experience was in Santa Barbara. I actually was the headliner for their gay pride benefit.
Wow.
And there was about 400 people in attendance, and I did an hour of stand-up, and I just, you know, from then, for the next 4 years, I never looked back.
Now, our age-old question for our gay comics, do you prefer a gay audience?
No, I do not. I prefer a straight audience, to be honest.
Really?
Yes, I do. And I'm not opposed to a gay audience. I love a gay audience. Don't get me wrong. I love gay people, of course. I'm gay. But I prefer a straight audience because I think because of the contrast of who I am when I'm up there, it still goes back to, like I said, that stereotype of they are, you know, still expecting gay people to be a certain way, and I'm not. So I think I kind of shock them when they find out I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
But they're already with me at that point, so they're curious about it, you know, and they kind of are like almost living vicarious through my routine, you know, of what I'm saying, because I get such a great reception from straight people and such great welcome and, you know, oh my God, I love you and blah, blah, blah. And whereas I think sometimes, and then gay men would be my second choice because, you know, I live in West Hollywood, so I'm really used to being around gay men all the time. And I kind of feel like, you know, that's where I fit in. And they're just as receptive. But I think when it comes down to gay women, they're actually judging you.
Mm.
You know? Like, you're up on stage, and they're like, oh, you know, is she funny? Is she not funny? And they're comparing you to other gay female comedians. And I think that's fine. But I think, like I said, my first choice of an audience would be a straight audience.
There you go. One of the issues that you talk about there on stage, which I've watched so many different YouTube clips of yours. And I just, look, am I entertained immensely? But I also just appreciate that you talk about weight.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad that you brought that up because, you know, I always talk to my girlfriend. I've had a girlfriend of 5 years, and I tell her it's really hard because you know, I am overweight, and I've been overweight for a long time, but I'm actually an attractive woman. And in our society, if you're a white woman who's an attractive and who's overweight, society won't accept that in you because if you're pretty, they want you to be good. They want you to be thin.
Right.
Whereas if I was fat and unattractive, that would be acceptable to them. Do you understand that?
Totally.
And I might get some flack here, but if I was a black woman, it would also be okay because society says, oh, well, if you're a fat black woman, it's okay. They don't judge you. But if you're a white woman and you're, you know, fat and attractive, they think, oh, you really should lose weight. And you've got a pretty face and, you know, they're constantly judging you, constantly. You know, like you're constantly, oh, you're too pretty to be overweight, and why are you overweight? And so I just thought, you know what, I'm just going to make fun of it. You know, I'm just going to make fun of this, like, whole entire thing. And, you know, why do you care if I'm overweight? And make some fun of some of the stereotypes that people have of being overweight.
Yeah. And then weight issues within the gay community, that's a whole different ballgame. You have weight issues in our society, and then you have you know, how fierce gay men are about weight in the community and lesbians are a whole different way. It's quite complex, and it's a little bit relentless.
It is. I mean, especially because I'm not sure, you know, how it is for the rest of the country, but like I said, I mean, I live in West Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
One of the biggest gay male meccas in the entire world, actually.
Yeah.
And the men here, honestly, Ken, are gorgeous.
Oh, I visit, yeah.
And they're in constant competition with each other, and they're constantly, I mean, you always see them at the gym, working out, walking down the street with their gym bags, because they know if they don't keep up, it's like survival of the fittest.
Right.
If they don't keep up with the other gay guys, they don't have a shot, and they really honestly don't. And I think what happens is some of the guys who are overweight, they actually go to the extreme, you know what I mean? And they actually, they become bearers, and they're like, well, they embrace their fatness, and then they just get fatter and fatter and fatter and say, well, if I can't be this skinny, good-looking guy, then I'm just going to be this fat guy and call myself a bearer, you know?
Yeah.
So and with women, you know, I mean, the women here in West Hollywood are also, you know, very good looking, and unfortunately they have that show, The Real L Word. It's not indicative of the women who are here, because, and I want to set the record straight as a Los Angeles lesbian, when they chose those people, they brought in a crew of women from San Francisco. You know, they don't look like the way the women here look. They're very raw and tattooed, and they're kind of nasty, to be honest, in my opinion. They're rough looking.
Yeah.
And so when The Real L Word came out, everybody thought, oh, that's what Los Angeles lesbians look like. And I'm like, no, it's not. They're not all tatted up. They don't have dreadlocks. And, you know, they brought in San Francisco lesbians and called them Los Angeles lesbians. So I think that what's happened here is a shift has gone from, you know, I mean, you have these really good looking, attractive, fashion conscious lesbians. And then you have these really hardcore, I'm a dyke, you know, tatted up lesbians. So.
Oh, that little, I'm telling you, every summer I do that San Francisco to L.A. AIDS ride, that little rivalry between San Francisco and L.A., I love it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, is there a rivalry?
I think so.
I didn't even know there was a rivalry.
Well, tell everybody about getting a date, because you put yourself out there, which I love it. You hosted Lesbian Knows Best, which you can watch on YouTube, like you can watch clips of it, which is great. And then after doing that show, you wrote a book called Get a Date Today, How to Market Yourself for Love. Let's just get right down to it. What am I doing wrong? How should I be marketing myself better, Vicky?
Okay, well, basically, are you online? Are you trying to get a date online at all?
I am, yeah.
Okay, well, here's how that whole entire thing came about, just so you don't. And Lesbian Knows Best is me giving advice to straight people, and that's the whole title. Get it? Lesbian Knows Best, and then they get advice. And I actually wanted to become a motivational speaker, and they said, well, you need to write a book, and they're like, what can you teach somebody? I'm like, oh, my God, I could get anybody a date, and I know what they're doing wrong. And when I first went online, you know, looking for a date, like on any various website,
right.
I just saw people market themselves so wrong. They choose a crappy name for themselves. You know, they're like, you know, quiet man seeks same. It's like, okay, what do you mean by that? You are a quiet man seeking another quiet man? Oh, no, I'm not seeking that. I'm like, and that was a straight guy who wrote that. You know, I'm like, okay, well, that's just, you see what I'm saying? That implies that you're a quiet guy seeking another quiet guy. I mean, you need to be more specific. And then the other thing is people put up terrible pictures of themselves. I mean, they'll put up a picture of themselves, like, you know how people have a picture of them with somebody else, and then they cut the other person out, but you can still see half of the other picture? You know, the people who are looking at you are like, who's that in the picture? Is that their ex-boyfriend? Or is that, you know, are they dating that person? Or who is that? And so, or people who wear sunglasses in their photos. I'm like, why are you wearing sunglasses? I mean, do you have bug eyes? I mean, what's happening there? Or if you don't smile in a photograph, I mean, why are you not smiling? I mean, that goes back to our primitive days. If you smile, that means you're friendly. So does that mean you have jacked up hillbilly teeth or missing teeth? I mean, so you have to market yourself in a certain way. It's like you're a product. You know, you are literally a product, and you are trying for someone to buy you, in essence, which is a potential date. And if people go online and they see thousands of other people, what's going to make you stand out? So my entire book is basically teaches you how to be an advertisement of you.
Nice.
You know, how do you advertise yourself for someone to actually buy you the product you?
So my unsmiling picture coupled with my headline of Dead Inside Seek Same, it's just not winning me anything.
And it's not winning you anything, Ken.
Okay.
It's not winning it. You might get a groundhog right there.
I'll take it. I'll take it at this point. Now, you're hosting your own show on cable there in West Hollywood. What brought that on?
Okay, well, I'm not sure if you know, but, you know, I got out of stand-up for 7 years.
You did? I saw that.
Yeah, I did. You know, I came out of, you know, when I started doing stand-up, I came out with a vengeance, and I just, you know, like I said, rose really fast. And what was happening is I didn't know it, but I became a diabetic. And
wow.
I was in, you know, clubs traveling around, but I drank a lot of Coca-Cola, which is loaded with sugar. And in order for me to kind of pump up my energy, I would drink like 5 of them a night. So on top of my crappy diet of food, I was inundating myself with sugar, and I literally gave myself diabetes is what the doctor ended up telling me.
Wow.
I was giving myself, yeah, an extra 200 grams of sugar a day, and I just killed off my insulin receptors. So I had to take a step back from comedy, and, you know, I tried the other things I did. You know, I went back to school. Got a degree in political science. I wrote a book, wanted to become a motivational speaker, but inside of me, I just really missed doing comedy. And I couldn't deny it anymore. So this past February, I got back into comedy, stepped back onto the stage for the very first time, and I decided, you know, because I had used the public access system here in West Hollywood, which is, you know, if you're a citizen here, you have access to a television studio with 3 cameras, and it gets broadcast live. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to go back into comedy, I want to make a venue for other comedians and a platform for other comedians so that we could get out there and share our brand of funniness. And that's how I came up with Brash Babble with Vicki Wagner. And it's basically me and 2 rotating comedians each week, and we come up with a list of topics, and then, you know, people write in questions for us to answer. And it's me and the 2 comedians, and we're answering these people's crazy questions in our funny way, and then talking about different types of topics that are controversial and that maybe people want to hear about that other people are not talking about, and just bringing them up and, you know, getting them out there.
Love it. I want to be on.
I'd love it if you came on, but you live in L.A.
All right, that's not the point. Okay, fine. Next summer. And it just looks like such an incredible outlet for you. Like, you know, you took this break, and it just, you made such a career for yourself in comedy, and you took this break, and this looks like such an intentional step to put your voice right back out there. It just looks amazing.
You know what? You're 100% right. It's exactly that. It was an intentional step. Because
nice.
I figured, well, lots changed since I got out of comedy. Because before I got out of comedy, there was no logo television, there was no Hear television, there was no YouTube,
right?
No Facebook, there wasn't even a MySpace. So now, you know, fast forward, you know, from 7 years, there's all these, you know, venues and outlets, and I'm like, well, I need people to know who I am,
yeah.
So I have to get myself out there.
Nice.
And that's how I did it.
Well, where can folks go to follow you and learn all about the amazing things that you're doing?
Well, I would love anybody to, you know, friend me on Facebook, and they can find me on Facebook, and it's /TheVickiWagner. And that I'm also on Twitter. I'm at Vicki Wagner, VickiWagner. And I'm just getting started up with Twitter. I don't have a big Twitter thing yet, but I'm, you know, put all my announcements on Facebook. And I'm actually building a brand new website for Brash Babble, and we're going to put up all the episodes. And there's, of course, will be on YouTube. And if anybody wants to check out Lesbian Knows Best, I mean, that's had over 1.5 million hits. So, you know, getting out there. And it's actually pretty funny.
If anybody
wants to just search Lesbian Knows Best on YouTube, then they can see some of my stuff. Or just type in Vicki Wagner Comedian, and, you know, some of my comedy will come up, and they can find it that way.
Love it. Well, I went on quite the Vicki Wagner binge on YouTube. And am I entertained by you? Immensely, immensely. But I have to tell you, you are just so incredibly authentic. And I think that's part of what makes you funny, but it's also what makes you so unbelievably accessible. And I just so appreciate you putting your voice out there in this way, because it's just entertaining, but it also just gives us access to you and your own unique way of putting things out there and entertaining us in the process. It's just a great thing to behold.
Oh, my gosh. That's such a sweet compliment. I couldn't have asked for a nicer compliment, Ken.
Well, let me give you one more. Happy birthday, Vicki.
Thanks, Ken. I know. It's my birthday. Yay.
Well, as you do more things, can we get you back on the show?
Would love to be back on the show anytime. This show is so gay, and I am so gay. I'm as gay as they come, honestly. I am so gay. I love being gay, to be honest, so I'd love to be back on the show.
Unbelievable. Thank you so much, Vicki.
Well, Ken, thanks for having me on, and for all your listeners, like I said, you know, check me out. He's right. I'm authentic, and I'd love to get to know you.
Awesome. All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we, of course, do not have a ton of time left in this week's episode, so just a little LGBT news to throw out at you. It's still all about Russia. All eyes are on Russia. So many different developments. We'll cover a few of them, but there's a ton. The International Olympic Committee, they say that they are awaiting clarification from the Russian government on laws banning LGBT, quote, propaganda. Nobody knows what that word propaganda means. The IOC president said last week that Russian officials promises that participants in the 2014 Olympics in Russia, the Winter Olympics, that they would be safe. The IOC president is saying that's not sufficient. He said, quote, there's still too many uncertainties in the text. He told that to reporters. LGBT advocates have criticized the IOC for not taking a stronger stance against the law. Also being criticized is President Obama. He said just last week that he did not think that the U.S. should boycott the Winter Olympics to protest Russia's anti-LGBT laws. He said he's opposed to the Russian measures, but he said there should be no boycott. He said, quote, one of the things I'm really looking forward to is maybe some gay and lesbian athletes bringing home the gold or silver or bronze, which I think would go a long way in rejecting the kind of attitudes that we're seeing there. End quote. Again, a lot of LGBT advocates are protesting the fact that President Obama did not take a firmer stance in this. And it just keeps going and going. NBC, you know, NBC always covers the Olympics. NBC sent a memo to their workers who identify as gay or lesbian. NBC promised to protect them if they travel to Russia to cover the 2014 Olympics. The memo, which was sent by the company's executive vice president and chief diversity officer, called Russia's new anti-LGBT law, quote, deeply troubling and diametrically opposed to everything that the Olympics symbolize. I guess what's really not very clear to me, it's all well and good for the IOC to ask for a clarification on what propaganda is, and President Obama to say, no, let's go, gay people, let's win a gold, a silver, or bronze, and that'll show them, and for NBC to promise to protect them. I don't know that there's really an appreciation right now of what the actual climate is right in Russia, right this very second, for LGBT folks, because NBC, you're promising to protect them. That's kind of a bold promise when we don't even understand how Russia defines propaganda. Because all the accounts, and I said this a few weeks ago, all the accounts that are coming out from Russia now, the anecdotes and just the bloggers are saying the crackdown is unbelievable. And it's unbelievably oppressive. And you can be fired and you can be beat up. And it's not good. It's not good. So it just keeps going and going. There was an op-ed. I'm not sure if you folks saw it. There was an op-ed in the Washington Blade. And it said that boycotting Russian vodka and boycotting the Olympics is not the way to go. That the way to show Russia what the cosmopolitan ways of the world are is to go, and thus we will bring with us our pro-LGBT equality, and that'll show them. Again, I don't think we fully appreciate what the climate is in Russia right now, because I don't think that we can actually promise that and deliver on that. So it just makes me really nervous. I don't know. I said this a couple weeks ago as well, that there are the op-eds, and they persist, that compare these Russian Olympics and their treatment of gay people to Nazi Germany and when they hosted the Olympics and their treatment, obviously, of the Jews. And it's hard to deny some of these op-eds. I just feel like we're sending people into the unknown. It's really dangerous. It's just going to take, I was going to say, it's going to take just a couple of drunk people, but I think alcohol doesn't even need to be involved on this one. I think it's just going to be a nerve-wracking thing. If LGBT folks are athletes, let's even just say LGBT athletes are going and they're in any way thinking about Russia's crackdown on LGBT people, I can guarantee they're not 100% focused on their sport. And to have this added dimension to the Olympics where the five rings are supposed to be bringing us together, is just the antithesis of what it's supposed to be about. So why not boycott it? Why are we sending people there? Why are we saying, yeah, we'll protect you if you go? This is supposed to be the Olympics. It's not some forum that we're sending people to. This is absolutely the antithesis of what the Olympics are all about. So I don't know. I think even in the couple seconds that I was just talking about this, I am now firmly on the side of boycott. Mostly because I don't think we understand what's going on there. And I don't think we understand what the possibilities are that could occur. And it's going to take some sort of tragedy for us to say, okay, we probably should have been firmer about defining what propaganda is, about what it meant to protect our LGBT employees, about what it meant to encourage LGBT athletes to win a gold, a silver, or a bronze, about what it meant to go there to show our cosmopolitan ways. I just think this is all well and good to say these things from this soil over here, but I think we're asking too much of folks, and I don't know. I don't think we should do it. I think this is just not the spirit of the Olympics. And yeah, so Ken Schneck says boycott. We'll see what happens from that point on. I don't know. In happier news, there's happier news. Paula Overby of Eagan, Minnesota, she just this week announced her candidacy for Minnesota's 2nd Congressional District for 2014. Overby, who was born male but identifies as a woman, believes that she is the first openly transgender Minnesotan to run for Congress. The 59-year-old political newcomer acknowledged her gender identity could become a, quote, polarizing issue, but said she does not want it to be the focus of her campaign. So we will most certainly be keeping our eyes on Paula Overby. And that honestly wraps things up for this week's episode. There's a ton more stories coming out of Russia. You have the Olympic distance runner, whose name I don't have in front of me, and I feel really bad about that. And he took the silver and he dedicated that medal to LGBT people competing in Russia. And I don't know. It's just a mess. So there's a ton of stories. You can keep following Russia. We'll give you more updates on Russia next week because it changes daily. Well, what doesn't change is Russia clarifying their stances. What changes daily are folks saying, no, no, it'll be fine. We'll protect you, employees. I don't think we really know what we're protecting them from yet. So let's boycott. That's what I'm putting out there. Hey, a huge thanks to our guest, of course, to Roni Tenenbaum. You can check out his jewelry online. That's very exciting. And Vicky Wagner, the hilarious Vicky Wagner. Happy birthday to her. What a treat having her on the show. We have so many exciting artists coming up in the next couple of weeks. You will, of course, have to tune in. You can stroll on over to our iTunes page. If you just go to iTunes and type in "This Show Is So Gay" and you click subscribe, then you don't have to download our episode every week. It will do it for you. And while you're there, it only takes you a second and a half to rate us very highly. It very much increases our listenership, and we are appreciative. So get out there, folks. Go do some incredible things. Use your voice the way you know how to use it to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters, whether you are designing a new ring or a pendant, whether you are making people laugh, whether you are just talking about your own experience. And holy cow, does that make all the difference in the world? Get out there, go do it. And while you're doing it, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?